Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today, we'll talk about the latest in the investigation into the shooting of Ina Kwan, also took the life of her unborn child. We're discussing whether there are going to be charges related to the death of that child. We know that according to police, the child, it was a baby girl, was born and survived momentarily. And so there is a law in Washington state that allows for charges in that case. So we'll discuss that. Also going to talk about how an anti-police faction online painted a rally in honor of the Kwan family as some sort of right-wing endeavor. It was very bizarre, very divisive. Later, the media ecosystem is absolutely collapsing. The corporate legacy media system ecosystem is collapsing, and they're struggling to find out ways to stay relevant and to make a profit. And in doing so, they are completely ignoring the reason why the ecosystem is collapsing in the first place. So we'll have all of that coming up. But first, I want to tease ahead to our meet and greet that we're having this week. So we had a meet and greet yesterday. And Nicole, if you want to jump in, feel free. We had a meet and greet yesterday in Arlington. And it was awesome. Like 300 people showed up.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, I loved seeing you guys.
What a great place. I feel like Arlington has our people hanging out in it.
It was. We're at Elemental Cider in Arlington, mm-hmm. and we had a lot of fathers with their kids come in because it was Father's Day. Of course, we were doing a meet and greet, but we also were giving people an opportunity to sign Referendum 101 to restore parental rights in Washington. So we had a great turnout. Now, was I right, Nicole?
No, I never said that you were wrong. I never said that people wouldn't show up. Of course, people will show up. I just said it wasn't ideal for people.
I think a lot of fathers came. It was raining out, so who's barbecuing?
That's true.
You can just say it. You were right. It's fine.
I think we were both right.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. But I'm just going to tease ahead. We're having another meet and greet.
Yes.
On Saturday morning, and it's going to be down in the Lacey area, which I'm really excited about. And we are very grateful that Cutter's Point Coffee Company is going to be hosting us. So Saturday, June 24th, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., Cutter's Point Coffee Company on Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. There's multiple locations in Lacey, but we will be specifically at the one 5831 Lacey Boulevard, 5831 Lacey Boulevard. So come say hello. We will also have copies of Referendum 101 for you to sign if you choose to do so. Also, I want to make sure to make a pitch for you to subscribe to the show, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. You can become a subscriber for as little as $5 a month, and we would certainly appreciate it. Okay, I figured we'd just start. I'm going to get to the update on Ina Kwan and this wonderful rally that was held. I mean, super sad, but I think it was nice to see people come out and support her family during this really, really tragic time. But also, Nicole, there was a shooting at the Gorge Amphitheater over the weekend.
I know, that was pretty terrifying.
And that's like our spot.
It is.
That's our jam. We go for Watershed every year. Mm-hmm. And this happened in the tent area, like in the camping area.
Overflow area.
Yeah, because when you go in to the Gorge, you do go through a metal detector and like the wanding and stuff. And so when I heard it, I was like, wow,
there's
how did that happen?
Usually.
In the campground, I don't know how you would do any sort of check for firearms or anything like that. I don't know how that's possible.
No.
Yeah, there was an alert that went out. So this was at like an, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't really know, EDM? It was like a, was
I believe
it?
So.
Yeah.
That's what it is. The Wonderland something or another.
Yeah, so that was at that type of festival. You better believe the media would have a lot more to say about it if it had been a country music festival, but I digress. So it killed two people. The suspect was shot by police. We believe that he survived. But just imagine that. I mean, having been there, getting this notification on your phone, emergency incident. It said active shooter at Gorge Amphitheater. If at the Gorge, seek cover, run, hide, or fight. There's a PIO en route. And so, yeah, really scary situation. But I just wanted to note that because the Gorge is such a popular place. And I don't know if this will change any policies at the Gorge, but I just don't see how it is feasible in any way to try to search all the RVs. I mean, people come in there to camp for days on end. I mean, we go in with so much stuff.
Right.
We go in with like a caravan of RVs and cars. And how do you, I mean, they do have dogs that come around and do sniffing, but.
I, I think especially at this festival, there's a lot of drug use. And it sounds like this guy was kind of out of his mind a little bit. I don't know. I think that that'll probably come out, whether he was under the influence or if he came in to cause harm. But maybe that's where the crackdown needs to be. I mean, I get it. People go to have a good time. And, you know, Dave Matthews, weed, that's one thing. But this specific concert has had other deaths. Like,
there's been a lot of issues with EDM concerts.
Yes.
But how do you crack down on that too? It's the same thing. When you've got a caravan coming in, you can do drug dogs, but are they going to be able to detect everything coming in? Is that what you're thinking? Is like, because I'm assuming those dogs already check for drugs.
Sure. Well, there aren't dogs that are checking coming into the campground, I don't think, right? Are there?
Yeah, they did like a little circle with us.
Do a circle anyway. The RV. But I don't know. Maybe it's just police presence. Maybe it's, I don't know. Maybe just a crackdown on people that are obviously impaired.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's tough. Scary. So scary stuff, absolutely. But we'll wait to see if the shooter was all, oh, of course we're still going. Yeah. All right, let's move on to Ina Kwan. And, you know, there's been such this tremendous outpouring of support for the Kwan family. Of course, Ina was shot in broad daylight while she was sitting in her vehicle just a few blocks from the sushi restaurant her family owns. Her husband was shot. He survived. She was 7 months pregnant at the time. What would have been their baby girl did not survive either, was delivered on an emergency basis. So the suspect in this case, Cordell Goosby, 30 years old, he's been officially charged. I will say prosecutors proactively released information to the public about whether they're going to charge him with a second count of murder for the death of baby Kwan. And so in Washington state, you can do that under born alive law. But what the prosecutors say is they're reviewing, you know, information from medical personnel and the the coroner's report and all of that to determine, okay, was this indeed a child that was born alive? And can we then prosecute Cordell Goosby for a second count of homicide? So as soon as we hear that decision one way or the other from prosecutors, we will let you know, because I think that was the predominant question that I heard from a lot of you in the days after that shooting. And I will say there was a rally Saturday downtown for the Kwan family. And it was a really touching event. You know, it was raining, and maybe that was fitting for the occasion. But the city attorney, Ann Davison, was there. A couple city council candidates, including Olga Sagan, were there. And it was a very peaceful march and rally for people coming out and just saying, look, like, we need public safety. I think there were some signs that said public safety is inclusive. I'm like, that's so spot on. Because, you know, we talk all this DEI and inclusivity, you know, public safety and the ability to feel safe walking around your neighborhood, whether you're in downtown Seattle, the Chinatown International District, South Seattle, public safety is inclusive. And no matter the color of your skin, no matter your socioeconomic status, you should be able to feel safe when you are minding your own business, following the law, just trying to earn a living. And so coming up later on, we're actually going to have an interview with the woman who arranged the rally for Ina Kwan, because something really sinister happened before and after the rally. And it pissed me off to no end. You know, the woman who put the rally on, Susanna, she's a Republican. She's ran for office before. She's not a currently elected official. And because she's a Republican, you had this left-wing faction online that was painting this as some right-wing rally, suggesting it might be dangerous, suggesting there are political motivations for it. And it was so freaking sick to me. I mean, honestly, it was so sick and sad. And you know, it bothered me to no end. And when you showed up there, there was people of all ages and races. And again, it was very peaceful. And it was just people there who wanted to show support for the family, who wanted to leave flowers. So to see these sick anti-police crowd try to paint it as something it wasn't absolutely infuriated me. So I'm going to ask Susanna about that, too, because I have to imagine that she was, you know, sickened by it. And there's also this, you know, co-opting of this to talk about gun control. And look, so for instance, there was a man, and I was at the rally, and I was marching, you know, to the back left of him, and he ends, and I saw his sign, I saw his banner that talked about gun control, and it didn't bother me at all. His sign said, gun control works in every country that has it. It can work here too. And I saw a sign. I was like, well, I disagree, but I didn't say anything to him. Nobody was harassing him for having a gun control sign. In fact, there was a lot of people in the crowd who support gun control, political candidates who have come out in support of gun control. But this guy, you know, he takes to Twitter after the fact and he tweets that he brought a gun control sign and he felt like he was infiltrating a right-leaning rally. And I responded to him and I'm like, nobody said anything to you. Nobody was bothered by the fact that you're there. You know, this was a rally where all ideas were welcome. And I couldn't help but think, what if somebody who was a pro-gun person had brought a pro-gun sign into like a rally organized by the left? They would have lost it on that person. And so, you know, I think it's just, but all that aside, and I'll get to that later in the interview, the idea that gun control could have stopped what happened to Ina Kwan and her family. This was a guy, this Cordell Goosby, 30 years old. He has a felony conviction out of Illinois for unlawfully using a firearm. He was a felon prohibited from owning a firearm. The firearm he allegedly used to kill Ina Kwan and her unborn child was reported stolen. Help me understand what gun control law would have prevented him from doing what he did. Already convicted for a gun crime, prohibited under the law from owning a firearm, stole a firearm that he allegedly then used to kill someone. Now, I don't know the circumstances under which he stole the gun, who he stole the gun from. All we know is this gun was reported stolen. And so, you know, I get it that, sure, are there some instances and horrific events that may have been preventable under certain gun control conditions? Yes. But this idea of gun control, to me, it just says taking away guns. I mean, that's the only way I could think about this person not being able to get a firearm is just if there weren't any firearms. And so to me, that's kind of, I think, what some of these gun control people want is just for no one to own a firearm. And then you can't have someone like Cordell Goosby who can steal a firearm and use it to hurt someone. So I just think it's kind of a disingenuous argument under this umbrella. But again, we're going to talk to Susanna Kyleman coming up about the rally she organized and about the Asian American community sort of awakening. She said she's a Korean American, and she said, you know, the Asian American community has felt like it just kind of stays quiet, puts its head down, but it's starting to wake up specifically around the issue of public safety. And she says that it's going to be significant. And I mean, it's the fastest growing voting bloc in America. And so if they're coming out now in a couple high profile incidents and saying, we deserve to feel safe too, we value public safety, I'm very curious how elected leaders will respond to that. So we'll have more on that in a moment. On the Sunday show yesterday, Sundays with Subscribers, which just a note, I just found out just 15 minutes ago from that Subscribers on Locals, for some reason, the episode didn't post to your timelines. And I'm trying to sort out why, but we will have that up for you today. So I'm trying to get to the bottom of what went wrong there. But on the show, we had on Caleb Heimlich. He is the outgoing chair of the Washington State Republican Party. And I like that he's outgoing in the sense that we could have a little bit more of a blunt conversation about the state of the Republican Party in Washington and its chances of winning any significant races in 2024. And I wanted to play a clip from the interview because I actually have, I have talked about this sentiment before, and it's really started good, robust dialogue and disagreement around whether the Washington State Republican Party would be better served by almost forgetting about some of the statewide races and instead focusing their limited resources, time, and attention on, for example, trying to recapture the state house or the state senate as a way to really put in place some balance and a backstop for bad ideas. So here is a clip of my interview with outgoing GOP chairman in Washington State, Caleb Heimlich. There is a school of thought, including among some moderate Republicans, that you guys should cede the governor's office, the governor's race, to allow Senator Mark Mullett to slip through, who is a more moderate Democrat, someone who, if he makes it through with Bob Ferguson, would probably win. I'm sure that argument has been made to you in certain circles. Is there any way in hell Republicans would ever just say, okay, we'd rather have Mark Mullett than Bob Ferguson, so we're going to sit this one out?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And it's an interesting intellectual argument because that's what they did in Alaska. The Democrats ceded the race and supported an independent and got him elected as governor in Alaska.
Well, because if the alternative
they didn't
is,
have a nominee, and so they right. endorsed the independent. Now, it was an independent, not a Democrat.
Sure.
And I think the challenge with Mullett, while I agree and he's opposed Inslee on tax issues, he supported SB 5599, which is a big deal to a lot of our families, frankly, in Washington state right now. So to have the party supporting someone that's on an issue that's that crucial and important is on the other side.
But he would be better than Bob.
I agree, but I think that for people in it, we're not willing to give up on the state yet.
Yeah.
I think that to me, that represents waving the white flag and saying, we're now California, we have no hope. And yeah. and I don't subscribe to that yet.
Well, and but then kind of another layer of thought, we can have these layered conversations when we have enough time. It's, or is it better served, the amount of money that you have, which is not the amount of money Democrats have, to say, okay, our state hasn't elected a Republican governor in 35 years. Maybe we put the money we have toward trying to get back the House or the Senate. So we can block bills like 5599. So we can block the assault weapon ban. So we can block new taxes. Would that be money better spent?
Potentially. I think part of the challenge there is if you have two Democrats on the general election ballot in November, how many Republicans are going to decide not to vote.
Oh, I see.
Because people that are, I think voters are smart. I still fundamentally believe that. And they know that the Republican nominee, whether it's Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis, is not going to win Washington State,
yeah.
whoever it is, or Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, et cetera. And then if they get their ballot and the top of the ticket race that they look at is governor and they see two Democrats, do they just throw it away and say, my vote doesn't matter? And if that's only 100 people in the 10th legislative district, that could be the difference between winning or losing.
Yeah.
And so I think for, and my case as party chair has always been, we can do all three levels. We can focus on a state legislative race, focus on the governor's race, focus on a congressional race if we're building a field operation in the 42nd legislative district and we're getting Republicans out to vote, that has impacts up and down the yeah. ticket. So I get the argument that we should be using scarce donor resources strategically to prioritize House and Senate races, but I don't believe that that is actually advanced by giving up on the governor's race.
That's my interview with Caleb Heimlich, chair of the Washington State Republican Party, outgoing chair. You can hear our whole conversation at undividedpod.com by becoming a subscriber to Undivided. We talked about a lot of interesting things, you know, what elections in the past have sort of disappointed him and races and candidates. But look, I mean, I know it's hard as a political party to say, oh, we're going to give up on these races. But if the goal is to have a little bit of balance, right? Because you're not going to, as Republicans, win everything all at once. It has to be incremental if you want to bring balance back to the state. Is it easier to win an office that you haven't won in 40 years? Or is it easier to win a few House seats or a few Senate seats and at least control one chamber? And think about the power of controlling one chamber. You know, 5599 doesn't happen. The carbon tax doesn't happen. The capital gains tax doesn't happen. And so that's why I'm so passionate about divided government, because you really stop the worst ideas and you have to come to a consensus on laws that do need to pass, but they're going to be passed in a much better form. And I thought it was interesting, and I'll check back in on this when we read comments, but I, on the live stream, put a question: should the WGOP see the governor's race to avoid a Bob Ferguson victory? 45% say yes, 55% say no. I mean, I know it's pretty early in the campaign cycle, but I actually think that is very, very divided. And I was surprised to see that. But it's an interesting, as Caleb said, a very interesting intellectual argument. So again, check out our interview by becoming a subscriber, undividedpod.com. And again, for folks on Locals, you will have that today. I'm still in touch with Locals trying to figure out why I can see it, but you can't see it. Very strange. Okay, coming up next, I'm going to have an interview with the woman who organized the public safety rally in honor of the Kwan family. And specifically, we're going to talk about this really insane narrative from some on the far left that public safety rallies and a desire for public safety is somehow a right-wing thing, which is kind of a self-own, if you really think about it. But before that, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. In fact, I think Wes is coming to visit us in the studio soon, isn't he? Oh, I love Wes. He's so nice. He and his team at sellwithwes.com have an innovative marketing strategy to make sure that your home is ready to sell. It's in great shape to be the get the best possible price, but also that you get the most eyeballs on your home possible. Locally, internationally, making sure that they're putting your listing in multiple locations. And he said, one of the things I think that you can get honest advice from Wes on is the state of the market. And if you've got a little flexibility in when you can move and when you need to sell your home, he's a great person to give you advice. But he does say that after all the kind of ups and downs, there's a great window of opportunity right now for home sellers.
There's some pent-up buyer demand because buyers really went on strike starting last August and nothing happened. I should say very little happened the rest of the year. And it feels like we're getting back to your traditional seasonal real estate periods where a lot of home sales happen in the spring. So pent-up buyer demand, not a whole lot of options for buyers to purchase home, means that it's a great time to sell a home if you have to do something.
Yeah, so check out Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our interview with the organizer of that rally for Ina Kwan. The following segment is presented in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. As I mentioned, I participated in the public safety rally over the weekend in honor of the Kwan family. There was a moment of silence at the intersection where the shooting happened, and then we marched just a few blocks away to the sushi restaurant that the Kwan family owns. It was really an emotional day. As I was saying earlier, kind of fitting that it was raining. It kind of matched the mood that everyone had. Very somber day. The event was organized by a woman named Susanna Kyleman, and she is a past political candidate. She's a Republican, but she's not in public office right now, but she's also a Korean American. And so in that sense, I think she felt a connection to the Kwan family and was just devastated, like so many of us, in what had happened. I was really grossed out, to be honest, that there were some anti-police groups in Seattle that were posting pictures of Susanna Kyleman and, you know, suggesting that she was some right-wing person with a right-wing agenda for holding this rally. Again, for a pregnant woman who was murdered. It was just really strange. So anyway, I invited Susanna on today to talk about why she felt compelled to do this and also to have her react to some of the weird hate and vitriol she got online for the simple act of caring about public safety. Susanna, welcome to Undivided. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What compelled you to put this together?
Oh, a couple of things. I'm very involved in the AAPI community. And when this happened, my girlfriends and I, we have this kind of running text message. And we're kind of always talking about, like, what can we do for the community? What can we do for the community? And the event happened. And most people know I did run for office previously. And so a lot of the text messages that were coming through were, we know that you're in a position to do something because you were a candidate before. Are you already doing something? People are automatically assumed I was already doing something. And I was keeping tabs on social media because I was expecting the community to do, the AAPI community to do something. And they were reaching out to me saying, what are you doing? How can we help? And so we were brainstorming for a while on this text message, and it started, you know, The community in itself is very much keep your head down, maintain a quiet composure. If you do speak, make sure that it's effective. And we didn't want to do something that was quiet, that didn't also serve a message that this needs to be brought to the spotlight, but more importantly, that a solution needs to be put forward that works. And so we just thought, why not just do a very peaceful march to bring focus to this incident and bring everyone together. Everyone was invited, and that's exactly what happened. And I wasn't honestly sure who was going to show up. You know, I didn't know if it was going to be 10 people or hundreds of people. So I was very happy that many people showed up from all over Washington State to pay respects to Ina and her family.
Yeah, and for people who didn't go, and I was there, and it was a really nice, peaceful event, and, you know, I saw a lot of people, you know, the city attorney was there, Olga Sagan was there. Bob Kettle was there, who's running also to represent downtown. So a lot of people who I know to care about public safety. What was your, you gave remarks outside of the Kwan family's restaurant. What is the message that you really wanted to get across?
That this was 100% preventable. I mean, I resonate personally with this because I'm a woman. I'm a Korean American. My mom was an immigrant who had a small business. And even though Ina was in her 30s, I saw that as that could have been my mom in her 30s, or that could have been any one of us. That could have been one of my girlfriends. And I have so many close personal ties to Seattle. So the main focus was just bringing attention to this incident, bringing attention to her GoFundMe page, because they're going to need that, especially because they were small business owners. Because she has a child, they're going to have medical expenses. So I wanted to draw attention to their GoFundMe page specifically, because money does help that family heal. But more importantly, that this was preventable and that we need solutions.
You had mentioned, you know, the Asian American community kind of keeps a low profile, but there, I mean, increasingly so, there have been a couple instances where they've really come out in force to ask leaders to help keep them safe. I mean, I'm reminded of the march that happened in the Chinatown International District over a planned homelessness complex that no one wanted their, you know, input on. And then you had this march as well. Do you think there's sort of an awakening going on where the AAPI community is like, okay, we're not, and we can't be silent anymore about this stuff?
Absolutely. And we don't want this past Saturday to be where it stops. We want this to be the beginning of change. And what we've seen out of those events is a lot of virtue signaling, declaring racism a public health crisis, hashtag stop Asian hate, hashtag support small businesses, hashtag support minorities. What does that hashtag do if it's not followed by good policy? Nothing. If you're showing up to events and claiming your ties to Korea or showing your ties to the African American community, put policy together that protects that demographic. But really, safety needs to be for everyone. Safety is the best form of inclusion that we can provide.
Yeah. Yeah. I've kind of not challenged you on this, but, you know, when the march happened in the Chinatown International District, I think it had been very clear that that's a community that had been used for photo ops by progressive leaders. And then when they dared to, you know, want to say in this homelessness complex, they were sort of ignored. But in the case of the shooting with the Kwans, is there any indication that racism against Asian Americans motivated it?
We don't want this to be smoke and mirrors. We want this to be about good policy. Yeah. The solution doesn't require calling out the fact that this was a Black versus a Korean American. You can't ignore those components, of course, because of the historical cultural significance between Blacks and Koreans. But the solution doesn't mean we further that divide between those two cultures and demographics. Solution really has to be about policy. And again, policy is universal.
I've got to ask you about something that I will be honest, infuriated me to watch unfold. Leading up to the rally and afterward, there were attacks from anti-police factions online who said, you know, they were posting pictures of you saying, oh, she's just a Republican. She's coming up from DuPont. This is some right-wing rally to further a Republican agenda. I imagine you saw some of that.
Of course. And before I even get into that, I want to draw attention to something. If we put focus on race and we put focus on the fact that this is a hate crime, our government can't even handle regular crime. What makes us think that they're going to handle a hate crime? Again, labeling it is just being virtue signaling.
Yeah.
In regards to the comments online, I just have to ask, what are you doing to be a part of the solution? A lot of MAGAs, a lot of people on the far right would disagree, and they actually call me a rhino and they think that I'm not Republican enough. So I think that's quite funny, but I'm also not going to be a victim of cancel culture. I'm a Republican. Deal with it. I'm here with a solution. I'm not running for office right now. I ran for office in the past. I lost my campaign. That doesn't mean that I can't be a grassroots leader.
Yeah.
Ina could have been anyone.
And I don't even think we have to say more about it. It's so, you know, it's so sinister to me. But I also think it kind of undercuts their position, because every time there's a call for public safety, you call it right wing, then that tells me that you're not for public safety. Like, is only the right for public safety? And you're saying the left isn't? So yeah. It's a very odd thing, but I commend you for doing it, for taking the pushback from just crazy people online. And what's next, do you think?
Yeah, so I was introduced to a whole bunch of grassroots organizations that are already active. And so I want to draw attention to those grassroots organizations. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. Everyone wants good policy. Everyone wants us to be inclusive. But I do think it is important that the solution does involve the voices from all spectrums. I spoke with a lot of people that came up to me right away and self-identified immediately to say, hey, I'm a liberal. I voted for the people that are making these horrible decisions. I saw the gentleman that had the anti-gun sign. I'm glad he was there. The First Amendment protects everyone. He was welcome there. I encourage everyone, if you want to be a part of the solution, show up and be a part of the solution.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting for people, just to give a little context to what you said there. There was a man, I was actually marching next to him, who had a sign about gun control. Now, I disagree with the sentiment that this shooting, which happened, you know, which perpetrated by someone who was prohibited from having a firearm and used a stolen firearm to commit the crime. I disagree with the sentiment that it could have prevented it. But, you know, nobody said anything to him. Nobody harassed him for his position. And then he went on Twitter and posted him and his sign saying he felt like he was infiltrating a, you know, a right-leaning rally. And what I said to him is, I said, but how did people treat you? You know, they treated you just fine. The more ideas, the better, even if I disagree with them. So, Susanna, thank you so much for doing this. I know it's really meaningful for a lot of people in Seattle. And so I look forward to seeing what else fastest growing voting bloc in America, the Asian American community. And so I know it's not just about politics, but if they want to feel safe and they don't feel like the people in power are keeping them safe, then, you know, they ought to be paying attention to what that's going to do for their reelection campaign. So, Susanna, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Brandy.
Yeah, just a really, truly insane sentiment. And honestly, as I alluded to with Susanna there, if the far left in Seattle wants to act like public safety is a Republican thing, then fine. Republicans can absolutely embrace it and go with it, because I think most reasonable people, left, right, and center, want to feel safe. Who doesn't want to feel safe when they're walking around? So I think we let the far left fringe of the Democratic Party fade into obscurity as they continue to, you know, have these anti-public safety sentiments, because at the end of the day, it's going to work against them, hopefully. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And I should note, before we move on to Unbelievable, that there is, and you heard Susanna allude to it there is a GoFundMe account that's been set up for the Kwan family. If you're interested in donating, it's kind of everywhere at this point. We can certainly put a link to it in the description of today's episode when we repost it. It's gotten more than $200,000 in donations for them. And, you know, as small business owners, I know her husband, you know, the sushi restaurant they own is going to be closed until further notice, understandably so. It's just a tremendous outpouring of support from the community, both in words, but also in action with the donations to that GoFundMe page. Okay, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. I think we've known for some time that the legacy media is crumbling. And, you know, whether it's newspapers or ratings for network news, cable news, or local television news, it is crumbling, absolutely. And I think it would be wise for legacy media to sit and ponder why. Except whenever I see stories about, oh, what are we going to do to save legacy media, to stop news outlets from fading into oblivion, it never centers around the reason why those news outlets aren't doing well to begin with. You know, it looks at, oh, how can we better fund them? Can they be funded through philanthropy? And, you know, the whole move to putting things behind a paywall, for instance. There was this opinion piece in the Los Angeles Times, the headline, "How Weakened Local Journalism Created Space for the Culture Wars." It reads, "The implications for democracy are beyond debate. Social scientists who study the issue have demonstrated clearly that less local journalism results in higher levels of corruption, undermines political competition, and reduces citizen engagement. Making matters worse, the vacuum created by the absence of local news is often filled by the national culture wars." And look, I agree that less local news is bad. I agree that disappearing hyper-local outlets, newspapers, fewer options is bad. I also agree that the decline in local media options has given way to the culture wars. It's given way to people who are coming in to fill the gap. Now, we are an offering that is coming in to fill the gap. I left legacy media to do this job. And we talk about the culture wars. Now, I hope that we talk about it in a way that's not stirring hatred and misinformation. You know, we certainly try to do that. But I agree that it is a bad thing on the whole to have fewer media options for Americans, 100%. What I don't agree with, and in this Los Angeles Times article, is, again, the way they're going about thinking about it. In the article, they talk about, well, maybe privately rich people in philanthropy need to contribute to make sure there aren't news islands, etc. But when you're just looking at how to fund these legacy outlets, when they're crumbling, when they don't have the readership, when people don't want to pay for them to get behind a paywall, when the ratings are crumbling and so they're not getting as many advertisers, you're looking at the wrong thing. You're not looking at why those outlets are failing. And so if you just find a new way to fund them, you can do that. But that doesn't mean it's going to increase readership. It doesn't mean it's going to increase viewership. And I pulled a couple articles that are just from the last, you know, few weeks that really should have them better thinking about why this happened to media in the first place. For instance, if you want to know why is local media crumbling, why is legacy media crumbling, I'll show you the front page of the Seattle Times. The day that Ina Kwan, a pregnant woman, was gunned down in broad daylight in Seattle. The front page of the Seattle Times, the top story, was about a $28 hamburger on the day that Ina Kwan was killed. And you wonder why you're not getting as much revenue as you once did. I'll point to an article in the San Francisco Chronicle that shows another problem with the legacy media, that they are obsessed with planting seeds of division where no division exists. The San Francisco Chronicle article comparing hatred of cyclists to racism and homophobia. No one wants to be spoon-fed division. It's absurd, and you wonder why people don't want to subscribe to your newspapers. When it comes to network news, seeing their ratings absolutely tank, maybe it's why in the case of outlets like CNN, when it comes to your rabid hatred of Donald Trump, that you will platform anyone who has something negative to say about Donald Trump, even if everyone watching can tell that their motivations aren't sincere. People like Bill Barr, who worked for Donald Trump, who had nice things to say about Donald Trump as he was working for him, but now that he's not working for him, and can get paid by CNN, he's willing to say whatever CNN wants him to say.
He will always put his own interests and gratifying his own ego ahead of everything else, including the country's interests. There's no question about it.
And again, maybe Bill Barr believes that now, but Bill Barr never said anything like that when he was in a position to actually make a difference in the Trump administration. But motivations, flip-flopping, it doesn't matter to CNN. As long as they can platform someone who will tell them what they want to hear about Donald Trump. And CNN wonders why its ratings are in the toilet. You know, local television news is no different. How many times have we talked about the fact that gas prices are way up because of the carbon tax that Governor Inslee and Democrats passed? This was common sense that if you pass a carbon tax, the cost of that is going to be passed along to consumers at the gas pump. It's not only going to raise the cost of gas, but it's going to raise the cost of everything else we buy that is brought to us on trucks that rely on gas to get there. Yet our friend Todd Myers over at the Washington Policy Center, he reminded us of how the media covered this issue back when he was warning people what would happen before the carbon gas tax was passed. I call it a carbon gas tax because, let's be honest, that's what it is. This is an article from Crem2, which is owned by Tegna, which has a unit called Verify, where they say that they're out there verifying what's true and what's false for you, the news consumer. This is their headline in 2022. No, Washington is not adding an additional 46-cent gas tax in 2023. But what actually happened in 2023? Gas prices have gone up about that much, just as Democrats were warned. So maybe the reason why local news media is failing in this case is because you take what the majority party tells you and you run with it, even in instances where you're claiming to verify what's true and what's false. So it's unbelievable to me that the legacy media, the corporate media, it seems perplexed, baffled even, as to why revenues aren't the same, subscriptions aren't the same, ratings aren't the same. And you want to find a way around that by asking for private donations, private funding, new funding models, without actually taking time to acknowledge the reason your industry is crumbling in the first place. So go ahead, find a new way to fund it. But you will not find more readers, and you will not find more viewers. Absolutely unbelievable. Okay, coming up next, oh my gosh, I don't know whose idea it was to put Senator John Fetterman on a stage next to President Joe Biden, but it went just about as well as you think it would have gone. We'll play the clip. But first, I've been talking about our friends at Firstmark Insurance. Mike and I are now members of the Firstmark family, having taken the Firstmark Challenge. They did a full analysis of our coverage that we had. They went out, shopped all the major carriers for us. We didn't have to do a thing. And they came back and said, hey, we think we can get you much better insurance for about the same price. It was a no-brainer. Here is Dave Taylor, the CEO of Firstmark, talking about really what was one of the challenges for Mike and I is we were underinsured.
So the risk is if you get in an auto accident and you don't have enough coverage, you get in an auto accident that's your fault and you don't have enough coverage, then they can come after you personally for any additional amounts over and above your coverage limit. And that means things like your retirement plan or come after your equity in your home or garnish your wages. So it's a big thing. And like with you and Mike, I just think most people haven't had someone take the time to explain it to them in terms they can understand and show them the how inexpensive it is to actually get the correct coverage.
Yeah, and I've said it over and over. This sells itself to me because all you have to do is dedicate a little time to talking to Firstmark. They'll go over everything you have. They'll go out, find you what you need. You're either going to save a bunch of money, or like Mike and I, you're going to get better insurance for the same price, or you just stick with what you already have. And if they go out and they do all this searching for you, they might come back and tell you, like, actually, your insurance is pretty good. You're doing just fine. And then you come away with peace of mind. You never pay Firstmark Insurance for anything to be a member of the Firstmark family. So go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the Firstmark Challenge. Firstmark, they work for you. Okay, let's step outside of Washington State for a moment. Look, why is it so controversial to talk about the mental state of people who are in positions of power? Whether it's Dianne Feinstein or John Fetterman or the president of the United States, Joe Biden. We have to be able to put politics aside and say, are these people in a position mentally, physically, whatever it is, to do their jobs? This should not be a controversial, divisive issue. Yet it is, because of course we're talking about Democrats. And so Democrats are like, oh, they're just fine. In fact, he's going to run for four more years. It's just crazy to me. So anyway, there was a bridge collapse in John Fetterman's district, and he was up on stage, and he's had a slew of health issues. And it shows. And look, if you're not the most eloquent person but can still get your message across, fine. But this has nothing to do with his speaking capabilities. This has to do with damage from, I think it was a stroke, right, that he had on the campaign trail. And then he's been dealing with depression issues. So anyway, he's on stage next to Joe Biden. And, I mean, try to even comprehend what message he's trying to get across.
And now I'm standing next to the president again, next to a collapsed bridge here. And he is here to commit to work with the governor and the delegation to make sure that we get this fixed quick, fast as well, too. This is a president that is committed to infrastructure. Yeah, and then on top of that, the jewel law of the infraction bill that is going to make sure that there's going to be bridges all across like this, all across the America getting rebuilt.
I mean, that's sad. I feel bad for him. It's not funny, you know? And he also was in this hearing talking about this bridge thing. And I could see the look of his staffer behind him like, oh no, like, are you okay? He's not okay. It's not right to do that to him, to like continue to, whether it's his family or his political party, prop him up like he's capable of doing his job. Just to what? Have another seat in the Senate? That's sick. And the same for Biden. I mean, I really still truly believe that Biden is not going to run for another term. I think at the end of it, they're going to put somebody else, maybe Gavin Newsom. I don't know who it's going to be, but I don't think it's going to be Biden. That being said, I mean, it's clear that there's a lot of people his age. Is he 80 or 81 now? 80? I don't look, Nicole, 80 or 81. There's a lot of people his age who are just fine. They have all their faculties. I mean, really, what did you do?
80. He'll be 81 in November.
Gotcha. So anyway, you probably saw this. He's speaking in Connecticut, and this is how he ends his remarks.
All right. God save the queen, man.
And then he doesn't even know where he's going. The queen is dead. I mean, that's kind of offensive to our allies. And then the White House comes out. They just run this whole spin machine like, oh, he was responding to someone in the crowd. No, he wasn't. He's just not mentally capable of doing the job. And it's sad. Like, I always tell Nicole whenever I used to fill in on Dory's show, I'm always like, I don't like making fun of Joe Biden for his flubs. And I get that, you know, some people have a good laugh at it. But to me, I look at this old man who's having some severe mental challenges, mm-hmm. that needs to just be at his house and be with his family and enjoy the rest of his life.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that it's, you know, I'm not making fun of a mental illness or whatever, but right. they're saying he doesn't have one. They're saying this is just cute.
Well, no, not
Joe
a
Biden.
Mental illness. Like, right. He has like, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, if you have Alzheimer's or if you're leaning towards some sort of dementia, like, or dementia, whatever, then it would be making fun of that, right? Yeah. But they're claiming he has none of that. And this is just silly Joe Biden doing silly stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, given that he's the president and is putting himself out there, or they're putting him out there, that you have to call these things out.
It's dead serious. Yeah.
Yes. Because this person is making decisions that affect us all, have huge consequences, and it needs to be taken care right. of. I mean, we need to figure out what the problem is, and they need to, you know, not run him again. And
right. And just be honest. I think you hit honest. It on the head there, is that it's so offensive and gaslighting, mm-hmm. to constantly make excuses for all of these things, you know, and like when he tripped the other day on stage, and yeah, there was a sandbag there. Could a young person have tripped on it? Sure. But come on. I mean, come on. And so it's offensive to us. It's gaslighting. It's lying. It's manipulating us to believe you're going to run him again. He's raising money, you know, for God knows who, because it's not for him.
Right.
So just have some respect for the intelligence of Americans. Mm-hmm. And it also is going to take Democrats admitting that, yeah, there's a few in Congress who have, but it's going to take Democrats acknowledging that this isn't, it's cruel to continue right. to do this with this man.
And the Fetterman stuff is.
And the Fetterman.
That is cruel.
Super sad. Mm-hmm. Awful. Okay, we'll get your questions and your comments next. But I've been talking about, one of the nice things, I need to look at my email. So at the event, we had the meet and greet. You know who I saw?
Who?
I saw Ben Bailey. Okay. Did he come say hi to you? So Ben Bailey is a viewer of the show who had sent us an email about his weight loss. Yes, and he lost a bunch of, and he was with his wife, and they both lost weight on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. There he is. Oh my gosh, he looked so good. He lost like 15% of his body weight in just a short period of time. He looked great, and he said he felt great. He was excited about it. So I got to find the picture of us, because all three of us took a picture, and we should figure out collectively how much weight we lost on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. But I ran into several people at the event who had done the program. They're like, oh, I'm down 25 pounds or whatever. I've had great success, down 35 pounds on the program. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. The nice thing about the program, there's no prepackaged meals. You cook your own food. You can find things to eat out. It's not some weird diet where you've got to count calories, strenuous workout routine. It's not hypnosis. And you can do the entire thing virtually. You never have to set foot in their office in Kirkland to do it. And I think that's really nice. I actually heard from a friend of mine back home who's doing it because they saw it like back in the Midwest.
Wow.
They're doing the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan from there. So eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, let's get to your questions, comments. Matt Gilbert, you're funny. So I forgot, it's Juneteenth today, which...
I didn't forget.
Oh, well, because traffic was
traffic
good for
you. Was so beautiful this
so
morning.
So I got a lot of crap previously because last year on Juneteenth, I said that I actually think Juneteenth is a more important holiday than July 4th.
We so, just say equally, maybe?
Yeah, they're both important. They're both I just important. Hear a lot of people on the right who dismiss Juneteenth or who laugh at it. And I didn't know a lot about Juneteenth until a few years ago. I'm like, what's that? And then I learned about it. And as someone who loves and values liberty and this wonderful country of ours, I don't know how you could look at that holiday and the significance of it and dismiss it as not important. Because to me, and this is why I've made the argument about Juneteenth being, in my mind, almost a more American holiday in the sense that I don't think our country could live up to its promise until Juneteenth. So yes. When you had, you know, the Declaration of Independence and people are like, oh, you know, we're free from Britain. We still had slaves. How can you be a country on freedom and liberty and still have slaves? And so you have the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, General Grant who surrendered at Appomattox. And then you had slaves in Texas who didn't even know they were free for like 2 years. So I don't think that we could even begin to be to live up to the promise of our country until every single person in our country was free and knew they were free.
Absolutely.
So that's why I think it's a very important holiday.
I agree with the importance. I just don't know why we have to compare them.
Okay, you're right. We won't compare them. Just, that's fine.
It's just an additional important holiday.
Well, so Matt said, I can't believe Brandy and Nicole are working on Juneteenth, the holiday more important than the 4th of July, according to Brandy. Mary says, without the 4th of July, there would be no June 19th. And that's true.
Sure.
That's a good point. So maybe you guys have all convinced me that we won't compare them.
Yes,
I do think I don't like when the right makes fun of Juneteenth.
No, I don't think it's necessary to
people
make
do
fun
that.
Of.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's
or
not necessary
to diminish
or
it.
Acceptable to make fun of. I think it was the way that it was put in. It felt like the timing of it being,
tied to racial justice stuff.
Tied to racial justice. And then companies and businesses kind of had to like pile on and it wasn't like declared. And it was just this weird integration of it that I think people are making fun of.
Yeah. Well, there is certainly whenever anything around racial justice and companies and corporations get involved, it just seems so forced. Like, you remember when Juneteenth became a national holiday that Walmart sold like Juneteenth ice cream and everybody's like, okay,
yeah,
what are you doing? You know,
so I don't think it's making fun of the holiday itself and what it stands for. I think it's more the way that it happened and everybody piling on and
sure.
the disingenuous feeling.
Disingenuous. I get that. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Are we all squared away now?
I think we're
love
good.
This country.
No more
love,
comparing.
I don't think anyone can question my love of country or the 4th of July. Fireworks, great. Love them. American flag,
flags,
freedom, independence, all good. Mm-hmm. I just think that how can you celebrate being a country built around freedom when people weren't free?
Right.
So, yeah. Anyway.
Fair.
So happy Juneteenth to everyone who celebrates it. Let's see. Although Matthew said rule number one, Brandy's always right. Rule number two, if in doubt, see rule number one. True. Diana said, thanks for coming to our neighborhood. Great seeing you two. Nice to meet you. It was really fun because some people who came to the meet and greet yesterday, they told me their first names. I'm like, oh, I know you from Patreon or from locals, you know, people who regularly comment. Just nice to put a face to it. It was so fun.
So if you're not commenting, comment.
Yeah, if you're not commenting, comment. And then when I see you, I'll be like, oh, you're so-and-so. On the GOP and whether it should cede important races and just focus on making, you know, small progress, which, by the way, our current poll is 39% say the GOP should cede the governor's race. Now it's 39-61. 61% say no. I have a theory. I think some Democrats got into there and they're like, no, don't cede it because we want Bob Ferguson to be the governor. Anyway.
Well, I think that Caleb made a good point as well where you just don't want to give up yet.
I know. And I'm not saying give up, but I'm saying be realistic.
Right.
And I'm not saying that I agree with that sentiment either, but I do think it's worthy of an intellectual argument on the merits to decide. Right now, today in this election, Republicans could choose the next governor. Right. They could choose it, Republican voters. Now, it's not going to be a Republican, mm-hmm. but it could be a Democrat who's not going to say yes to new taxes. Although, and so I'll just read some comments on this because it's mm-hmm. relevant. Rachel says, a possibility with an independent, but not Mullett because he voted yes on two crucial bills. He voted in favor of the assault weapon ban, and he voted in favor of 5599, which we spent the weekend gathering signatures to repeal. And I told Mark Mullett to his face, you know, like, that you're going to have trouble getting Republican votes for that. I'm just saying he's still better than Bob Ferguson.
Right. And I would be, I hope we're going to have him on again pretty soon because he kind of on the 5599 thing, he was kind of,
he was like,
I don't know, on the side of maybe taking it to voters, maybe. I got the impression. I don't want to speak for him, but like we should talk to him about that again.
I got the impression he voted for it out of guilt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so or pressure.
Or pressure, but probably maybe. Guilt.
And then, you know, you brought up some points to him and he was thinking about those points. So maybe we can persuade him.
But that's what I like about him is mm-hmm. he is willing to change his mind and he's willing to think things through and acknowledge, well, maybe that was a mistake.
Right.
But anyway, I also think he had to take some votes knowing he was going to run for governor that would keep his foot firmly planted in the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. And the assault weapon ban, even though he says he believes in it, I think that was probably one of those.
Probably.
Anyway, on the rally for Ina Kwan and her family, Matthew, did any left-wing person or left-wing organization bother to organize an event for the Kwan family? Big no. True. Let me see here. Richard said, even though no current city council members attended, I did see two candidates for city council that were there, and I was glad they were there. Yeah, the two of the candidates, and I'm sorry if there were other ones and I didn't see you, but I know Olga Sagan was there and Bob Kettle. They're both running for Andrew Lewis's mm-hmm. seat. Was Andrew Lewis there? Anybody? Anybody see Andrew Lewis there? Can you believe that? Although, if he had shown up,
I can believe
it. I would have been painting him as an absolute, like, show-and-tell hypocrite. You know, I would have given him.
It's a lose-lose for him. At least he showed up.
No, I wouldn't have. It's a lose-lose for him. If he was there, I would have said, that's so disingenuous. Anyway, he probably knew I was coming, and he's like, I don't want to go. On the media ecosystem collapsing, Daniel's circus adventures. Oh, is that a business? Will you Google that?
Yes.
If you have a Circus Adventures place, I'd like to see what that is. Says mainstream legacy news outlets say more with what they don't say these days. What they ignore says more about them than the stories they choose to cover. That is so true. And that's one of the issues that I ran into in legacy media is there are there's a lot of self-censorship where stories about the pandemic that I wouldn't even pitch at a meeting because I'm like, they're never going to let me do that. Bob says, absolutely, Brandy. I'm floored by how often the front page of the Seattle Times looks like the opinion page topping the headlines. So sad. And again, I go back to the Seattle Times front page. The day a pregnant woman is murdered in broad daylight in downtown Seattle. And they have a giant picture of a hamburger and a review of a $28 hamburger. And then Ina Kwan stories about, yay, tiny little big in the thing. Insane. That's crazy. This is your daily reminder to unsubscribe from the Seattle Times and subscribe to Undivided with Brandy Cruz. We will never do a story on a $28 hamburger. I can promise you that. And actually, that is a perfect segue. Did you find out what Daniel's Circus Adventures is?
That's his YouTube handle, but he does... Gosh, what's it called when those two, when the
like the
material
rope,
hangs from the rope thing and you do all that acrobatics?
Oh, that's cool. See, people, you need to have your handles when I read comments be your business, and it's free advertising, essentially. Anyway, so subscribe to Daniel's Circus Adventures on YouTube. Very curious. Okay, I think that last comment is a good segue into our closing. Sanity check. Nicole looks at me. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. You just knew I was going to be like, where is that, Nicole?
I was focused on Daniel over here.
That's all right. Circus Adventures. Look, I'm writing something about this right now. Maybe I'll post it tonight or tomorrow. But the amount of anger I felt over the weekend was probably unhealthy, but I think well-placed. The amount of anger I felt toward these anti-cop people online, specifically it's an account called Divest SPD, which was really active during the defunding debate and very anti-cop. The amount of anger I felt toward them for attacking Susanna Kileman, for daring to care about the Kwan family, for daring to organize a public safety rally as a Republican, it might be the most pissed off I've been about anything Seattle related in a long time. Because You know, people are dying. People, this isn't a game. This isn't political. People are dying. And whether it's drug addicts on the street who are overdosing at record levels, whether it's innocent people like a mom and a business owner and a wife who was just going to work, 7 months pregnant, is shot 4 times, once in the head. You know, to question the motivations of people who care, to question the motivations of people who want to feel safe is insane to me. It is honestly kind of evil. And I think if we hope for any difference, if we want there to be any change, that is a faction in Seattle that we have to leave in the dust. That is a faction in Seattle that every single person in charge who pretends to care about public safety needs to vocally and publicly reject. And I know that that's politically difficult for Democrats. For a lot of Democrats, they find it very easy to speak out against the far-right fringe, to speak out against Donald Trump. It's politically palatable for them and their base. But for some reason, they don't seem eager ever to speak out about the far-left fringe. When the far-left fringe is actively destroying our cities and our state, the far-right fringe has no influence here. Does the far-right fringe freak me out sometimes? Yes. But when it comes to our day-to-day lives, they mean nothing. The far-left fringe is responsible for a lot of the negative policies that have been pushed in Seattle, and even reasonable Democrats are scared to speak out about them. They're scared about being attacked. They're scared about being labeled right-wing for daring to care about public safety. And the real challenge for those left, right, and center who want to speak out about these things is just not to give a damn. Is truly not to give a damn. Like you heard from Susanna there, she's saying, I'm Republican, deal with it. I'm bringing ideas to the table. It is time to forcefully reject people who seem to want to make public safety worse. And that is my challenge to all of you. It's time to end the insanity and paint them for what they are. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. A reminder, we are going to have a second meet and greet this Saturday in Lacey. Cutter's Coffee has been nice enough to host us for this event. I will be there June 24th, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. And there's multiple Cutter's Point Coffee locations in Lacey. We're going to be at 5831 Lacey Boulevard. Nicole, you're not going to be able to make it. I should tell people that. Because if people show up wanting to see you, they're going to be very disappointed.
But the point is to sign. So that the point is to sign the referendum.
I will be there. I know I'm not Nicole. However, I will be present. So yes. Again, we hope you can join us. We are working on a third event somewhere in King County, so stay tuned for that. But please, we had a great showing in Arlington. Lacey, let's see if you can get more than 300 people out and top Arlington and show that you care about parental rights. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. We can't continue to do this. We can't grow the show without your support. We'll see you back on the live show tomorrow.